Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto. I'm here to bring you Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Last week, I spoke about Reiki, the energy, which is translated from the Japanese universal life energy, and about Reiki, the form of practice, which brings students to this energy and having a conscious relationship with Reiki. This week, I'm privileged to have with me Volker Brink. We were traveling together and ended up in Paris for a conference, and I was able to interview him during this time. So I'm asking our engineers at the studio to break up this interview and present it to you in these four segments today. Volker Brink was born in the Netherlands and grew up there, and that's where I met him some more than 20 years ago now. And he, in his lifetime as a Reiki master, decided to buy a big American-style mobile home and drove it all around Europe. It was called the Healmobile. And now he and his wife, Maria, are settled in this very southern part of Greece and have a wonderful center there, and you can access this through his website. I'm very happy to have Volker here with me, and we had a great interview. So please join me in welcoming Volker Brink.
Thank you, Phyllis.
I'd like to, first of all, ask you if you would share with us your Reiki story. How you came to Reiki, how you discovered it, and and what it felt like to you to find Reiki, which I think back in the time when you were initiated was not a very well-known practice.
That's correct. I will make it not too long because, excuse me, the whole story is a bit longer. But basically, I met somebody who was talking about something Japanese with your hands. And because I had a practice with psychotherapy, hypnosis, I was interested in that. I wanted to know what it was and ask him to tell me when there would be a possibility to be in contact with it. He said, well, we are organizing a workshop for the master from Canada, who is Dutch, Inge de Roog. And so I got the information that she would come. I telephoned her. I said, well, I'd like to be in your workshop. And she said, that's not possible. The workshop is full. I said, but I want to be there. And after a long silence, she said, yeah, okay then. And so I was in the first real workshop in Holland in 1984. And before I left the workshop, which was very interesting, however, I was talking more about what I knew than I listened to her. So in the later workshops I was in, I got much more information. And I directly said to her, I want to do second degree. And she said, well, tell her to the universe. Because she didn't know if she ever would return to Holland. So I told her to the universe and she returned. And some months later, I did the second degree. And immediately in my life I started to use it, and I worked in social work, so if somebody had something, I said, well, do you allow me to put my hand on? And then they said, it's very hot and things happened, and so it started. And so my path went on, and I became a master in this discipline.
What an amazing story. And how many years was it between your first degree and your master's initiation?
I was initiated at the end of 1987 as a master. And I started in the end of 1984 with the first degree.
About
3 years.
About 3 years. Oh,
yes.
Interesting. And I understand that through your practice that you became very interested in calligraphy and the kanji, and I'm just wondering, is there a story behind this connection?
Yes, I think so.
Great. Would you share it with us?
Well, I was brought up in the art academy of my parents, and I didn't like brushes anymore because my father was teaching, And after the class, I was always cleaning up the brushes and the plates with ink, with paint. So I've seen thousands of brushes in my life. So it was not my big interest. And then I was in what they called in that time a self-assessment workshop. And there was somebody who did grinding ink and let makers one line. And I was sitting there just grinding my ink. And I don't know why there were cassette with gongs and I don't know. I just entered a different space. And one moment I just took my brush and I put it on the rice paper, on the left bottom of the page, and I made one line to the top right corner. And at that moment, the sweat was pouring out of my whole body. I was really soaking wet. So I not even looked much at the line. I stood up and walked in the forest, and I don't know. I entered a different world. I felt if coming home.
Mm-hmm.
I recognized something. I don't know. But the brush never left me and became one of my most important teachers. Now I always say the brush cannot lie. Because when I use the brush, I make a line. If I'm a single split second not there, the brush will show it and tells me that I was not present. And the brush will tell me if I'm in power, if the line is straight, or if I push too much, or if I do not allow to flow ki, what the energy of Reiki, the energy of our life energy. If I don't allow this really to flow, you can see it. The brush tells me everything. And so I started to practice. And when I practice at home, I started to practice with one line. And they call that the bone stroke. It looks a little bit like a bone. A bit thick on the start, and it's thinner because you lift up your brush and you put your brush down again.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for 4 or 5 hours. In the meantime, my wife went to her sister to help her moving houses. And when she came back, she said, "Are you still making that line?" I said, "Yes." And she was totally blown off. Because she said, "You never could do anything longer than 10 minutes in your life. You were like quicksilver." And I was just sitting fascinated by the brush and that line. And so I started to practice, and yeah, then I started with the kanji, what for me was my symbol of what I did, the depths of healing, the depths of connection with the universe, and I started practicing this kanji.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out that when I do it, I can see that sometimes it's imbalanced, it's not in balance. And I could put my body over it. I could see which part in my body was out of balance. And then I started to work on this more and more. And when the kanji was in balance again, I felt in balance again.
Mm-hmm. Was the balance that you're speaking about a physical balance or emotional or maybe everything?
Everything. Sometimes emotional, like a reflection. It was in the part of my chest. Or in the part of my intestines, I had a feeling I cannot digest things in my life. I'm not willing to take it in really. Or with my lungs, like the very subtle connection with people that I didn't let that in. And after I did that, I felt if I had more air and was more willing to connect with people.
Mm-hmm. So that was reflected in how the symbol looked after you, not symbol, but how the kanji looked after you did your calligraphy.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And during making it, I could feel it.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you very much, Fuka. That was really wonderful. And I have this great image of you lying down with the big piece of paper over your body and your receiving your lessons from this kanji that you've just done. I'd like to give the listeners an idea of what this means in grinding ink. So a little bit of information for you all. In Japanese and Chinese calligraphy, when people use the brush to write with or to do calligraphy, like Zen calligraphy paintings, they have a little stone that's made out of a kind of gray material, and there's a little well in the stone, a little dip, where there's some water in it. And the calligrapher has an ink stick, which is basically solid ink, and it's kind of like a charcoal, and it, if you get it on you, it stains permanently. Then what they do is they take this ink, and in either figure eight or in circles, they rub this ink stick on the stone in the water so that these little minute particles of ink come off the ink stick and are suspended in this water. And you have to do it long enough, and sometimes this takes an hour or even more, to get the ink thick enough and have a body enough to actually do the calligraphy and serve as the ink. So it is said that the calligrapher imbues the ink with his energy, his or her energy, and the brush also, so that the key of the person goes right in to the ink. And then when you either make your line or you draw a circle or you create a kanji, like Foka was just talking about, then the energy of the person is represented in whatever happens. So there's no mistaking, and there's no mistakes in this particular kind of practice, because everything is in the moment and reflective of that moment. You just get to see what was in the moment afterwards. And sometimes you would rather it not be in the moment. Okay, well, I would really love to continue talking, but it's now time for a commercial break, and we'll come back in a few moments with Foka Brink and our next section of the interview. Until then, please check out the kanji that is on the e-card for this program, because he's going to talk a little bit about this in a few moments. Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto. Welcome back to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We have today with us Foka Brink, who has studied the kanji of Reiki. And because he wanted to study the kanji of Reiki, he got into the study of calligraphy and has gone on his own search and met up with many teachers who have shared with him their own knowledge. So in this study of the kanji, Foka, what did the study of calligraphy and the kanji give you? And I understand that even though you've studied with many Japanese masters, you don't actually speak Japanese yourself, but it seems like that even without the basic language knowledge, you've really come to a very deep understanding of the kanji and the message of the kanji for all Reiki students.
When I studied this kanji, I found teachers who are specialists in calligraphy. I went to the Chinese Art Academy, where I had private lessons with the director. I went to a Japanese art center, a Shinto community in Japan, Oomoto in Kamioka, where I did traditional Japanese arts, and one of them was the calligraphy. I learned about that in the Japanese kanji, every line comes from a pictogram, from an image, and has a meaning. So when I looked at that, I started to investigate every line, every single line, and the harmony of it, the connection between it. When you have one line, it means one. When you do that in calligraphy, it means everything is one, and one is everything. And it symbolized the heaven. So only this little part, to think about what means heaven to me. underneath the heaven are the clouds. Out of heaven as a present for the world is coming the rain. So the first part is rain. What is rain? Water. It is the main source of life. So I felt a connection with Reiki, that it started in heaven as the main source of life. There is without water, there is no life on our planet. So I felt this deep connection with the source. Underneath that are three little blocks, and all three together, they represent three mouses.
And three mouths?
Mouths.
Like
a mouse you can talk with.
Open mouth.
Open mouth, not that thing from the computer now.
Okay, just checking.
Yes, it's good, because in this electronic world, you never know.
Yes, exactly.
And these three mouths together means praying. So, there is a praying for the main source of life. And then the last part of the, because the first part of Reiki, of Rei, exists out of three components. So the first component, rain, second component, praying. The third component is a combination from heaven, which is connected by the earth, by people. So the connection heaven and earth is also the meaning of work. So there's work from people. Said, that's nice. So Reiki is not sitting on a chair, putting your hands together, hallelujah, I got my initiation, and the universe does the rest. No, there is written work from people. So without my work, my self-treatment, my work on myself, there is no Rei. So there doesn't exist Reiki, if you take it out. So I had to keep on going doing things. And I'm a lazy boy sometimes, so it was good to recognize this.
That's a great, what would you call it, a great support in your practice then.
Oh, yes, it is.
That's great. And yeah, then there's a second kanji?
Yes, and then these three kanjis together create one new meaning.
I see.
Yes, and the new meaning is transcendent power, spirit of a being, soul. Mm-hmm. That means that both in all kind of cultures, they have different names for it. The Holy Spirit, the universal energy, whatever. And in the Japanese way, this is the whole universe, the spirit, the transcendent power, which is bigger than whatever we can imagine. And then you get underneath a little space. So between the universal power is a little space where you get another kanji. And that starts with three lines and a longer line like a tail. And that represents vapor. And also it's possible to use that breath. And underneath that is a little one that looks like a cross with four points. And that is the kanji, the character of rice. So when I studied in Japan, in the morning we got breakfast, we got rice. In the afternoon, with lunch, we got rice. Well, you can imagine what the dinner was.
Rice!
So, what does the people in Japan and China know? When they eat rice, which they have been in connection with vapor, they get power. It's the life force, the living life force. Because there are 40 kanjis of ki. And they all mean something else. So, in Reiki, is the kanji of living energy, living life force. And I have one beautiful description from Shikun Master. I read it in a book. Okay. That he said, when you put the dragon-like kanji of vapor, of breath, together with the eight treasures of rice, then the dance of life can start.
Nice. Beautiful. Very beautiful.
Yeah.
So can you sum up then your definition of Reiki as an energy?
You are something. I always tell to my students, if I could tell you what Reiki is, then don't believe me.
That's a good point.
Because my brain is too small to get this concept.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the inspiring of life. It's every step I do. It's every movement I make. When I was with my teacher in Daibuzatsu Mountain Monastery, New York State, where I did calligraphy and got my Buddhist name from this work, I gave him once money because he did something and I got a book from him, and then he pushed the money back in my hand. And he said, "That's no Reiki." And I was looking at it because I know they like money also and they need it. So now I looked at the bills, I folded all the corners straight, I ordered it in 20, 10, 5 bills, and spread it nicely out and said, "Are you willing to receive it in this way?" He said, "Yes, please." And immediately I understood that even giving money could be an expression of Reiki. Everything we do, in my opinion, is an expression of Reiki. Either we do it, or we don't do it. And behind that is a universal concept of energy, where we are a part of, like, I sometimes describe it as, we are like a color. In a beautiful painting that the big paintress of the universe made, and they put us on a specific place, in a specific color. And the thing we have to do in life is to be as beautiful as possible as this color.
Mm-hmm.
Not wishing to be another color. We are this color. And to understand this gives me a meaning of, I am in the right place in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I connect every daily life thing with Reiki for me. I don't like high-fly spiritual talk in this way. It has to be practical.
Well, that's something that I found, that Reiki is very practical.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Foka, that was really an amazing explanation of the Reiki Kanji. And I hope that you listeners out there who maybe got kind of lost will be able to find a copy of the Reiki Kanji, if not on the e-card, somewhere in your things, or other people who don't have Reiki can do the same thing, because the kanji is everywhere these days. And re-listen to this portion of the program, because I found it very fascinating, the whole detail of it. We're going to move in our next segment of the program, where Foka Brink will talk a bit about his adventures in Japan, what he went there to find, and if he found the essence of Reiki in Japan, and his advice to those who are going to Japan to find the essence of Reiki. Meanwhile, we have a commercial break, so it's time for myself, Phyllis Furumoto, and the program Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, to take a station break now. We'll be back with Foka Brink in a few minutes. Hello, welcome back. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today we have Foka Brink, who has shared with us his path of being a Reiki master, his path of searching for calligraphy and finding teachers, and then the teaching of what the kanji has given to him. So in his travels of finding calligraphy teachers and finding the essence of the kanji, he has gone to Japan several times. So we're back with Foka and his adventures in Japan. Often people ask me if they should go to Japan to find the truth about Reiki, not just the form of Reiki, but also about Reiki the energy. And you've been to Japan several times, and I'm wondering what kind of advice you can give people around this search for some kind of palpable connection with this energy. Do you find it in Japan? Or if you do, and if you do, how?
Well, I've been several times there. What I found out is that the Japanese people were very happy that I did not come as a spiritual tourist. When I came and I showed them my books with the seals I carved with the masters, I showed them the calligraphies I did, the way I was connected with the Japanese culture. They opened different doors for me. Because they said, you have done something to respect us. And not just to come to here and to think that every Japanese can tell me everything about Reiki. So there was a different way of entering the country. And what I see nowadays is that many people say, oh, I have to name everything in Japanese, I have to do this and that, I have to go to Japan to see the grave, I have to see the monasteries to meet this, that. And I don't know, if it doesn't come from a deep place of honor, of respect, of being with this, and if you are not willing to go deeper, then I think you don't find it there. You can find it everywhere. You can find it inside of yourself, and you can find it in anything. So I'm not sure if going to Japan would be the best solution for all people. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. We have a Western way of thinking. We have a Western way of approach. We have a Western way of understanding the gift that we got from Japan. And we have kind of an illusion in it too. Because like everybody or many people think that all Dutch people walk on wooden shoes. Every Scots guy has a kilt where he walks with. But that are modern, different cultures now. And it's the same in Japan. When I studied in Omoto, the no-drama teacher, he said he was very severe and strict to his son. He said he often cries. He said, but I will be sure that he will not become like the 90% of the Japanese people who do not recognize their own culture anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something in it that not every Japanese knows that. They know the word Reiki, but in many different concepts. It's the same, what I just told you, is one of the many possible explanations. Because every kanji, you can explain in many different ways. But we have a spiritual discipline, so I have looked for the meaning out of the spiritual discipline. Like, when you have a cross, it's different for a carpenter who made it than for a priest who uses it. And in Japan, many people don't know about what we do, like laying hands on as a spiritual discipline. They know it in a different way. And I'm not sure if people find the depths of it. But what it does, if you go to Japan, you get a different flavor of the background where it came from. Mm-hmm. And it could help you to give a kind of context. So, hey, there it comes from. How can I, myself, come close to the essence of it, not to the form of Japan, but to the essence of respect, of honor, of understanding? That could be a big help.
I see. And for those people who are questioning their motivation to go to Japan, to seek the truth of Reiki, I'm just wondering how people know the difference between going to fulfill or to connect with a kind of passion that they have in their lives to being a spiritual tourist. Like, I'm interested in what the differences are.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends. Some people have the feeling that they go very deep with it in that way. And not even recognize that they are a spiritual tourist.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's difficult to give advice or to say something about it, because where are you in your practice? Where are you in your understanding? And it slides very easily to judge people if they are right or wrong or better or whatever. And I want to avoid that for myself, because it's beautiful to see that every boy, every people, everybody is doing the best they can. And for me, it's sad to see that in what I did too in Japan, in my effort to do the best I can, I violated the energy, the culture of the Japanese people sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me an example of that?
Yes. Yes, when I was in Japan, I thought I have to be very, very careful, because you never know if you do it right. So every time when I wanted to do something, I asked the master who invited me and who guided me to looking for the roots of the Usui system. I always asked him if that was okay and if I could do it and if that was correct, until at the end of my trip I found out that asking questions was very impolite.
I see.
So he got pissed off with me on the moment. He said, "You are just a spiritual tourist, and that is not possible and not true." Later we came together again, but I violated their culture with them. Mm-hmm. In wanting not to violate it and doing my best.
Well, that's very true in a lot of our lives. That's my experience anyway.
Uh-huh.
So what would your advice be then to people who go and have questions and, yeah, I mean, what is their, what would you recommend as a posture to have?
I don't know.
To just go and walk and sit.
You know, just go, sit, look around, observe, go to old temples, sit there, go to places of art, see the culture, and just be there. Because Reiki in Japan still, in the older tradition, is a private art. It's kept in the family. It's not something that they brought out. So it's very difficult to what people like to do. I want to find an important master. I want to find an old master who knew Ayashi, who knew Takata, or who knew Usui or whatever. But it's a family thing. It's a private thing more. So if you are not invited by people to go there, it's very hard to find it. There are a few people now who have contact with this old Japanese people who are still alive. But it takes a lot of effort, or a lot of mindfulness to find them or to be there. It's not just that I buy a ticket and I find them. So first of all, just to get the impression, what's going on there?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, taste the food. Look at the calligraphies. Go to the shops where they have stones. And then you can see that we think all the Japanese know about Reiki. They all know the way we do it, and even more. And it's not true. When I went, I thought every Japanese had a beautiful stone seal. And then there were shops where they have these things that come out of a fabric, just carved by a machine in thousands in stands. And there were very beautiful things made by masters. But how do you find, between this superficial way of doing things, the real masters who do it? It takes time just to be there.
I know that when I went to Japan, Foka, when we went together the first time, I also went with this idea of what Japanese people would be like with Reiki, and it wasn't true. When I got there, my illusions were blown in the very first hours that I was there. And what I realized was that the essence was that I had Reiki. That part I knew. My hands were different. My life was different. The way that I was with people was different. So for me, I got that the essence of this practice and the essence of who I was, Japanese, not Japanese, didn't matter. The essence of Reiki was in me, and it was not out there. It was not in Japan. And to know the culture, to know the history, is a great bonus, because then you really understand some of the inexplicable oddities about this practice. And sometimes people try to explain these oddities through our own Western eyes, and it doesn't wash for me, because we've taken something out of context and applied a different context to it, and it allows our mind to be led somewhere else. So heed these words and pay attention to your own motivations, and go to Japan and have a ball. I mean, just have fun watching people, eating the food, and being with a culture that has grown and developed a practice that we call Reiki now. And that is alive and well all over the world in many, many different forms. It's time now for a station break, and we're going to come back with our last segment of Volker Brink. Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto, and I'm back with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We're going to go right into our next question for Volker Brink, who's our guest today. Volker, can you give me an idea of your feeling of form and essence in this Reiki practice?
I think that, to me, the form is what we express. The form is what we can see. The form is what we practice. The form is that what goes outside, what makes it like a container which holds the essence. The essence for me is inside the people. Is that what I feel? That's what I understand. That's what I use as my personal practice to go deeper and deeper to the source of life, the source of being. And the more deep I enter the source, the more clear will my actions be outside in the form. So if I, in the past, I just was sitting, put my hands on, it worked. I was happy, very excited. Many, many things happened that helped me to keep on doing it. Then I found inside myself deeper places of understanding. Then I was sitting in a different way. Even outside, it looked the same, but people, when they looked at the actions I did, they felt a different quality, even if the movements were the same. And so I believe the essence is the unspeakable insight of it, of the form. And the form is what we can teach. The form is what we can pass on in the discipline. And the essence is which is on a different level accompanying the form. And I believe that the form is what we express, but the essence is that what the students can feel in us.
Mm-hmm.
So everything I do in a workshop, the people will feel it. Everything I do not do in the workshop, students feel it. And the way I respond to people, the way I act, has to do with the essence that I feel. And I express that in the form that I have learned in Usui Shiki Ryoho, and I pass it on in that way to my students.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. That's very beautiful. And it gives me a lot of food for thought. And I'm wondering if you also feel that this understanding of the balance between form and essence and how it affects our lives can also be found in other practices. Does it matter what the form is? Could it be not Reiki, the practice, but some other practice that brings you to the same balance?
I think that's true, yes. I believe that. I see, I wear always a symbol that I make myself. It's like a circle with a little circle inside and four spokes going inside. At the end of the spokes are three little balls. And that's a trinity for me. Me, you, and the universe. And we have on this outside circle a lot of disciplines, a lot of things. Buddhism, Shinto, Sufi, yoga, whatever. And I put Reiki there too.
Yeah, as a and practice. Christianity?
Christianity, Muslim, doesn't matter. Everything.
Uh-huh.
So what my feeling is that if I want to go deeper to the essence, to the center, then I can look on this outside circle, what fits to me. What is something that I can understand to practice? When I take this and I doesn't like it, I can try another one. But I see many people, after a few years, they take the next one, the next one, the next one, the next one. And so they stay, in a way, almost on the outer circle, instead of going with one discipline, one form, deeper inside. And you know, in a circle, when you go inside, the circles get smaller. So the differences between all these disciplines get smaller, the more you go to the essence, to the center. When you enter the center, I always say, you can look around and see that all these disciplines are coming to the same source. And in many different cultures, they feel attracted to a different form. So I believe that the form on the outside is the most dark, the most rigid. This is my place. This is Christianity. That is true. That's right. And the more you come inside, it more melts together. And you see the connection. And you see that what you have said, in different words, is the same essence and energy behind the other pathway, which I was fighting against first.
Mm-hmm.
So then I can join more. And the more close I come, and people in Christianity said we go to God, they go to Allah, they go to Buddha, but behind these names, to me, is one great light. And we put it in different names so that it is available for different cultures in the world.
And what do you think? A lot of people say that this is the time of Reiki, that Reiki came at exactly the right time, and I feel that for myself in my own life.
Yeah.
I was born into a family. I lived in Iowa, which is in the middle of the United States, and the main religion there was Christianity, so I was a member of a Christian church. And yet, when I went with my grandmother and finally realized that in my own practice of Reiki, I found a spiritual connection. For me, that's what I mean by being the right time. But for some people, they have a kind of general idea of the right time for Reiki, that it seems to come at a time when people are really searching for a new way of coming to the source place you're speaking of. Do you feel this in yourself?
I will put it in different wording.
Okay.
But I think you're right. And I explained it once in a way with an application for a job in a Christian society, and I was refused. So they kicked me out because of my explanation. So in that time I said, well, I believe that we are all on a huge river in little boats, and we are all rowing and flowing to the ocean. So then the religions, like churches, they go to the side and build a little harbor. So on the river are many little harbors, and they forget to row on.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in this image, Reiki is another boat which doesn't have a harbor yet.
Ah.
And many people are coming into the boat because they feel the stream again. they say, okay, that is something that gives me the feeling it is not dogmatism. It's not fixed. It's not. I can live this part which I was looking for in religion, and which was and blocked in a way, or like what that when butter gets hard instead of liquid.
Solidified.
So, and I feel more that I can come out of my deep religious wishing, not church, but religious feeling of moving with my spirit to the ocean. And so, I don't know, I hope Reiki will not build any harbor. And we can keep on flowing together and collecting all these people who feel closed and want to express themselves in this way. So in this way, it comes up in me at this moment.
That's a very beautiful image. Thank you, Fokke. Yeah. And it leaves me with a great image for this whole next week to think about. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And I wish you a lot of luck and fun with your programs.
Thank you. This is Phyllis Furumoto, Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, signing off for another week. I will be back next week with Ruth Wong Pine, who's from Hong Kong, who's going to share with us her viewpoint of Reiki. Bye-bye. Have a great week.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the 7th Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.